You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to TCRG to CEO Radio. I'm your host, Courtney J., TCRG, and welcome back to another episode. Thank you for being here. I hope everyone has enjoyed the little mini finance series that we've had going on. And we have one more before we go back to a guest episode next week. I tend to avoid doing so many solo episodes in a row, but I need a little bit more time to edit the episode that will be coming from our next guest. And it's a great episode that I'm really looking forward to publishing. Thank you everyone so much for the feedback about our Ask the Adjudicator episodes. Those are some of the most loved from this season so far, and I'm glad that it's been a great resource for pretty much everyone who listens, whether it's parents and dancers looking to improve their reception from local judges at FESHs, or if you are a TC considering becoming an AD, or you're another AD who just appreciated hearing all the different perspectives. The feedback has been really, really good about that episode, and I'm just so glad that everyone is loving it. We're going to start today's episode off with another listener question. It's been great getting these and being able to kind of save them and hold on to them for different episodes. And this one, simply put, is what if you feel like you're outgrowing your dance school or your dance school mismatches in desired intensity between a dancer and the school? And just a little bit of extra context behind the question was just, you know, what do you do when you're a dancer who feels like your school and your goals are no longer aligning for whatever reason? And I don't think this has been a topic covered on the show before. And I think it's a really highly personal topic that'll come down to each dancer based on what their goals are, what their desired intensity is, and I guess just the different personalities that, you know, might exist between the dancer and the teacher or teachers. And although it is a highly personal topic and thing to kind of consider and think about, I think it isn't a super unique situation. So what I mean by that is one of our guests this season put it, you know, in a way that I hadn't thought of before. I believe it was Nicole McKeever. And she talked about how Irish dancing is really unique in the sense that you could very well have the same teacher from the time you start dancing through the time you retire. And not only are you growing and changing so much in that time period, but you're also becoming a completely different dancer, right? From beginner through, say, novice and beyond, right? To whatever degree of championship you might achieve during, you know, your, let's even say your, you know, K through 12 for non-US listeners, you know, your kindergarten age 5 or 6, you know, when maybe a dancer might start dancing to the time they reach 12th grade when you're 17 or 18, maybe looking to move on. And not to say this journey is the prescribed one, but it is one that a lot of dancers follow. And just how much you, number one, grow and change as a person in that time, but also, you know, it's okay for your trajectory to change during that time. And let's just say you do start out enjoying dancing for what it is, for fun. You know, you make some friends, you enjoy doing it, you're learning things, you know, you're moving, you're grooving, you're enjoying it for what it is. At some point during that journey, you might decide you want to be more competitive. You take competition a little bit more seriously. You know, you're kind of bitten by the bug that we see so many dancers get, where it feels good to start checking off some of those goals. And then you start to set some bigger goals. And then, you know, before you know it, you're onto your first solo costume. And then you want to go to your first nationals or whatever it is. And at some point along the way, you might find that maybe your dance environment is too intense for what you're looking for. Maybe at some point you realize you're looking for more from your teachers or from your school, whatever that might mean. It might mean you might need more resources. You know, maybe the floor that you're dancing on is absolutely killing your feet and your legs, or maybe you're looking for resources in terms of, you know, steps, whether it's making them more current or maybe making them more tailored to what you are good at, or maybe you're looking for more instruction in terms of something you're really struggling with that maybe your teacher is just not a great match at, you know, being able to correct that for you. or whatever it is. Like, what do you do? And I think a lot of people, like I said, this isn't a unique situation, have kind of found themselves in this predicament. And my first piece of advice would be to have a conversation with your teacher or teachers. All of us out there really care about our dancers, right? This is our profession. It's what we do. We're all here to make each dancer be the best that they can be. And along with that, there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach, at least in my opinion. And I think having a really good, honest conversation with your teacher about what you like from your dancing career or from, you know, whatever goal you're trying to work on right now, and asking them how they can help you achieve that. And I think this conversation needs to happen, you know, not obviously during the middle of class. Like, I think you need to ask to set a time that both of you can kind of be in your very best headspace to have this conversation. And I think by asking them like what they can do to help you achieve that goal kind of puts it to your teacher to tell you what they can offer you. They might come back to you with feedback of, you know, hey, like, I'd really like to see you, you know, attending all of these classes and doing these things outside of class, or, hey, have you tried, you know, going to a yoga class to improve your flexibility? Or they might give you some things where they feel they'd like to see more. Or they might come back to you saying, like, I think a lot of teachers are really honest in what they can offer. And there might be a teacher who says to you, like, I'd really love to see you do that. Like, here's where I can help you, but we might struggle, you know, on X, Y, and Z. And then you're going to have to make some, you know, tough decisions potentially. And obviously some areas of the world, or even, you know, in the United States, you're restricted by what's available to you. But it's also becoming increasingly common to see dancers either move or temporarily train under, you know, maybe a school that you're partnered with, or that you have the opportunity to, you know, access, whether it's through university or like little exchanges. And I think having the conversation is the very first crucial step to seeing what your school or your teacher can offer you and where they might come up short. And then depending on what is coming up short in your view, you know, what you want to do about that or what you can do about that. So I know that was probably a little bit of a broad overview. It's something I guess we could talk about more depending on what the feedback is on that. But it's a question that I saved because I thought it was something maybe we hadn't really covered. But yeah, I certainly don't suggest just up and leaving, right? Without having that conversation. I think it's important to both, you know, give each other a chance to a certain extent. And the other important thing is to don't assume that your teacher knows exactly what you want. Sometimes it can seem one way based on behavior or perceived attitude, or maybe not being super vocal about what you want. And then your teacher doesn't want to feel, I guess, blindsided or, you know, kind of kept in the dark of like, oh, well, that's what you wanted. Well, you know, if you only had said, like, we could have done A, B, and C. So definitely don't assume that they know what you want. Have the really honest conversation. And it might be hard, but assuming you have a good relationship with your teacher, then, you know, it's worth kind of putting yourself through that slight discomfort to have that conversation. So I hope that helps. One more thing before we get to today's main event. Our guest for next week made a brilliant suggestion that I absolutely love and am trying to figure out how to pull it off. And the suggestion was to have a live show of the podcast at this year's North American Championships in Grapevine. And I know a lot of listeners will be there. I also know that a lot of our guests on the podcast, anyone that I've interviewed or sat down with, will also be there. And it would be a brand new project for me to start working on. And it's definitely something that will require a lot of research and coordinating, but I absolutely love the idea and think it would be a lot of fun. So I kind of want to start getting the feelers out for who will be at the North Americans and whether or not you would like to attend some type of live show. And I am a big podcast enthusiast myself. I listen to some podcasts where there's live shows at different events, and typically entails having some type of gathering place, whether it's a bar or restaurant or somewhere kind of nearby where the main event is happening, whether it's a sporting event or like a concert or something like that. So for us, you know, the main venue is the Gaylord Texan. You know, maybe there's potential to have something on site, or maybe we have to look off site somewhere. But I'm in the very early stages of kind of looking into what that might be like and seeing if we can pull it off. So if you are interested in attending some type of live show, or if you've been a guest and you'd be willing to kind of sit down as a panelist and be a guest of this live show, go ahead and send me a DM on Instagram. You can find me at CourtneyJ_TCRG. And I'd absolutely love to hear from you about kind of what your dream live show would be like, because it's not something I ever thought of or considered until yesterday when I was sitting down with our guest. And I think it's a brilliant idea. I absolutely love it. So let me know. But for now, let's get into today's main event. All right, so today's next step of our finance series is about planning for profit. And I feel like there's a few different things at play here. Number one, a lot of times when I ask a studio owner, whether it's someone I am potentially going to work with on a one-on-one setting or someone who's just asking for general advice and money is involved in some way, and I ask, are you profitable? Sometimes the studio owner isn't sure. They don't know. Or they think so, but maybe. And it's a number that you should definitely know whether or not you're profitable or not. And it's something that you can and should plan for. The other factor that I see a lot is that people feel like they're not allowed to make money or make profit. And I find it really interesting, but I also kind of understand it. There's a lot of different money stories out there, and there's sometimes, you know, people have all different feelings around money, whether it's shame or they are apologetic. And I guess let me kind of flip the script and ask you this. Do you feel like people that work regular jobs, whether it's 9 to 5 or they work for an employee or they work for a big company, do you feel like they are apologetic about going to work and getting a paycheck every other Friday? The answer is probably not. If anything, they feel entitled to it because, like, I went to work, I showed up, I did what you asked, you know, in return, I get my paycheck. And for you as a business, not only is making, you know, money and profit like your lifeline, but also you shouldn't and don't need to feel bad about making something back for yourself. This is your paycheck. And we can go into more depth about, you know, what to do with that profit. But most importantly, you need to have it as a starting point. And it's something that you can absolutely plan for. So today's episode, we're going to break down how exactly to do that, how to plan for profit. And a lot of this is around pricing. And I feel like a lot of people that are stepping into studio ownership are pricing things based on a few different elements. One, they might just pull a price out of thin air and say it sounds good. So for example, you might price something at, I don't know, let's just say you're selling socks and you go, okay, I'm going to set them at $10 when they buy them from the studio because $10 is a round number and it sounds good. But if you bought those socks for, let's say, $8 from the vendor, okay, yeah, $2 is a markup. You're making a little something. But like, how much did it cost you to have them shipped to you? Did you factor that in, et cetera? Sometimes people pull pricing based on just looking at competitors or looking at comparable products or services and setting their prices because you don't want to fall either too far out, too far in. And all of that market analysis and all of that data does absolutely have its place, but it shouldn't be your primary motivator for pricing a certain way. A lot of times people just don't have any idea how to price things. So hopefully this will be helpful to anyone who kind of feels that way. So what we're going to do is, instead of figuring out the price first and then hoping we make money at the end, because I do feel like that's kind of what tends to happen, is we're going to do this in reverse. First, we're going to figure out all of our costs. And I'm going to run this little mini masterclass, little mini workshop here with two different types of things. So we're going to do one as an event. Okay. So say we're holding a one-off event. We want to make sure that we make something back on our time. The other thing is we're going to price a new class or a new program. Because I know that that's something that people really need to have right when they're pricing their classes, because it makes up such a big percentage of a studio owner's income. So let's start with our event. We want to determine all of our costs. Let's say we're hosting a class fash. This is something I'm doing myself in the near future. So it's, you know, numbers that I had really handy. So what are our costs of this class fash? First of all, we're going to have a venue of some sort. Maybe you're renting a community hall. Maybe you're hosting it at your own studio. Maybe you have, you know, a local theater, something like that. Whatever the cost is associated with that, even if it's your own studio, which we'll get into in a second, you're going to have to hire an adjudicator for the day, whether it's an actual ADC or a G, or you're bringing someone in, you know, maybe a friend who is in the area. Maybe it's someone who performs in shows. You will need to compensate them, and you're going to factor that in because it's a cost, you know, up front. You're also going to have your awards. And maybe you're saying, well, Courtney, I don't know how many awards I'm going to order because I don't have my entries yet. You're making me do the cost first. You will do some projections on, you know, your best case scenario, worst case scenario, and somewhere in the middle. Let's just say all of your dancers enter the FESH. You know exactly how many dances that would be, how many dancers that would be. That is your, you know, essentially worst case scenario in terms of a costing perspective. Then maybe you have, okay, if 25, 30, whatever the low number would be for you, cost that out, and then somewhere in the middle. You're setting kind of your budget or your, you know, expenses so that you can ensure that you do make money at the end of the day here. So you're going to project all of that out, the cost of your awards. And then maybe you have some supplies like numbers and safety pins, tape for the floor, things like that. You're going to make sure you have that all costed out. Even if there are things you're not sure you're going to need, put them in your budget and make sure that those are expenses you can pay for if and when you do need them. In our other example, right, maybe we're starting a new class or you're redoing your pricing on your classes and programs and you want to make sure that you're, you know, doing it properly. You have two main costs here for any sort of class. Number one, the cost per hour of your space. Now, this is super easy if you rent maybe a local community hall and it costs you $25 an hour to be there. That'll be your cost per hour of the space. You know, if you want to add another dollar here or there for supplies, tape, Marley, etc. It's a little bit more tricky to do if you are in a space that you either lease or you own, or you're there kind of all the time and you pay monthly for like just it being there 24/7. But it is something you can figure out. What you're going to do is you're going to take that cost of what it is to be there. Let's say it's $1,500 a month, all in, right? Include all in, anything costs for you to be there and keep the lights on. And then you're going to add up the number of hours that you're teaching and using that space every week. So let's just say you're there, I don't know, 10 hours a week. Then you're going to multiply that by the number of weeks. So you can do 4 weeks, or if you want to make it really, really exact, you can multiply it by 52 divided by 12, which will give you like the annualized version of the weekly cost. Then you're going to take, let's say I'm doing the math here myself on my calculator. We said it's going to cost us $1,500 a month to be there. We teach 10 hours a week. I'm going to multiply it by 4 just to make it easy. 1,500 divided by 40 is 37.5. So it costs you 37.5 $37.50 an hour to be there. Second big thing is going to be your teacher. So it's going to cost you something to have someone teach that class. If the answer is you, right? If you are the person teaching this class, how much is an hour of your time worth to you? And like, be honest and be real with yourself. Do not say $0 because it shouldn't be $0. Include what you want to make. Maybe it's $25 an hour. Maybe it's $50 an hour. Maybe it's $100 an hour. Maybe it's $250 an hour. Whatever your time is worth to you, that's going to be your cost. Let's just go somewhere really in the middle. We have our $37.50 an hour to be in the space, and we're going to say that your time is worth $50 an hour to you. So that gives us $87.50 as our cost per hour to be running that class. So next, now that we have all our costs, is we're going to forecast our best, worst, and mid scenario in terms of revenue. So this is the money you're going to make. And in our ClassFesh example, right, our revenue generators are going to be the entries. And then in our new class or program example, it's going to be our tuition or fees to be in that class. So taking best case, worst case, something in the middle scenario, we want to make sure that we have a range. So in our ClassFesh example, let's just say that our worst case scenario, we get way less entries than we're expecting. We're, you know, hoping to kind of cover all of our expenses. We get $1,000 in entry fees. And then just to keep it really, really easy, we're going to say that our mid is $2,000 and our good scenario is $3,000. You know, depending on the number of dancers and the date and lots of different factors, you know, this could look really different. And how about in our new class or program example, you know, our revenue generators are the fees. So let's just say that we have, I'm going to take what is, I think, a fairly reasonable average of cost for 1 hour of class per week. We're assuming in our example that the new programmer class that we're running is a 1 hour class that runs weekly. So I'm going to do $18 an hour. I think that like probably is high for lower cost of living areas, but low for like maybe really big metro areas. So I think 18 might be a decent average to use here. Assuming it costs $18 per hour on your regular price sheet for your classes. If we have four dancers that take this class at that rate, that costs $72 per class, or that brings in $72 per class, right? Because we're taking that $18 per hour, multiplying it by four dancers. That gives us $288 per month because we're taking that $72, multiplying it by the 4 weeks of the month, getting $288 per month. Now, if you remember when we did our expense analysis, it costs us $87.50 per class, which is $350 a month. We got our $87.50 from, it costs us $37.50 an hour to be in the room, and it costs us $50 an hour for our teacher. So if four dancers sign up, we are running at a loss, okay? So that would tell you at this point in time that you either need to adjust the pricing for that class, right? If you think a worst case scenario might be likely, right? Or you decide we can't make it work. Let's say we have eight dancers who sign up for the class. This is our mid scenario. Eight dancers times the $18 an hour is $144 per class, which brings us to $576 a month, right? That's looking a little better. And make sure that your teacher is paid, your space is paid. You're making that little bit of profit, which gives you some money for a rainy day or towards some type of goal that you're saving for. And in our best case scenario, we have 12 dancers who take the class. 12 times that 18 an hour is $216 per class, which would bring in $864 a month, which would be a great way to like start propelling forward. This is kind of the thing you want to start seeing in all of your programs, all of your classes. So again, we're going to start with expenses first, right? Project those best, worst, and mid scenarios for anything that might be variable, right, in terms of costs. And then you're going to make sure that your revenue, right, those revenue generators are set, and you also forecast best, worst, mid scenarios for each of those. The difference, right, you're going to have to do a lot of math, will be your projected profit. In our ClassFish example, our worst case scenario gives us a very meager profit, right? Barely worth running. And then in our mid-case scenario, it even makes it, I think, very doable, right? We used my $968 in expenses. So if in our mid-case scenario, we were left with $1,032, I think we'd be pretty happy with that. And in our best case scenario, we'd be even happier with $2,032 left. Of course, all of this profit can be optimized, okay, you know, it's my favorite word, by marketing and distributing these things properly. So if it's something like a ClassFish, you would have an internal marketing campaign within your studio to make sure that you're promoting that event, right? Celebrating the benefits, making sure that everyone knows why they should attend and what they will, you know, receive from that experience. Same with any new class, right? If it's something that is open to the public, right? That opens up your marketing opportunities immensely. But even if it's a class where it's only open to a certain level of student, right? Maybe it's something where it's an Oireachtas prep class, or it's something where, you know, your pool is limited to the students within your studio, right? You can make sure that you're getting all of those feet in the door, right, that you possibly can, to make sure that you are planning for profit, because we don't want to put ourselves in a scenario where we're running at a loss, because that is something that can really, really, really start to not only grate on you and like burn you out as a studio owner, but it's also like then you're constantly on the hamster wheel of trying to catch up or trying to make money elsewhere. And this is all something that you really can plan for as long as you do the work beforehand. And again, we're not pulling prices out of thin air. They're also all based in covering our costs, right? That should be the motivator, is cover your costs, cover your own time, right? And then have the profit at the end. And then you can decide what to do with that profit, right? I wasn't going to go super, super deep into, you know, what to do with the profit, but what I would suggest, if this is something that's helpful to, you know, studio owners that maybe haven't really thought about this before, right, is whatever your profit is, whether it's from a specific event or a specific class or just at the end of each month, have a plan so that every dollar has a job. And what I mean by that is, let's just say we have 2,000 left at the end of the month, and I'm going to scratch this out on paper along with us. We have 2,000 in profit at the end of the month, right? Yes, great. Go us. Okay. This is after you've already paid yourself. This is after all of your other bills are paid. Okay. The only thing left is this at the end. What I would suggest is that you keep some of that money, right, and reinvest it in the business. And what I mean by that is you keep it in your, you know, business checking account, or maybe you have a separate account that you want to send it to. But it's usable, liquid cash that you can use for an unanticipated expense. We talked about that a little bit last week. So let's just say we're going to allocate 1,000 of that, right, to kind of our rainy day fund, right? The day that the speaker breaks, the day that, I don't know, some unexpected cost hits, or, you know, we're really accustomed to this these days, costs of things just go up. So let's just say that your, I don't know, studio director bill goes up, right? Like your software, you know, goes up in price. You won't have to make a ton of adjustments because you've built yourself a little bit of a cushion. Then we have 1,000 left over. So maybe you have a savings goal within your studio. Maybe you are really trying to get new mirrors, or you know that you need new Marley, or you need new chairs for the waiting room, right? I would maybe say to put, you know, 50% of that into that savings fund. So we'll put 500 into our like studio savings. And then we can use that 500 that's left over right? And maybe make another type of contribution, whether it's towards your retirement, right? Or towards, you know, you want to send it to your personal high yield savings account or something of that nature. Again, everyone's finances are very personal. And of course, if you're in a business where you're not the sole owner, you know, you're in a partnership or you have multiple studio owners, or maybe you have like a loan or you have investors, right, of some kind, then obviously this strategy isn't going to work for you. But knowing kind of our general audience here and that a lot of studio owners are solopreneurs, you can just use this for what it's worth to you of, you know, great, we made this profit, but like now what, right? Give every dollar a job, make your dollars work for you. And now you've not only planned for profit, but you have a plan for that profit, right? What you're going to do with it now that it's sitting in your account. So this is an episode that was a little bit tricky to make because I feel like it would be really so much easier to have like a visual example or like being able to do this on screen so we could do the math together. You know, you can see kind of my little scratch out and like, you know, drawings and mind map of how this all works. But hopefully the audio version came out okay. I did try to re-record it and like rework some things because talking numbers and not having you guys be able to see them is probably a little tricky. So maybe this is like an episode that we can build upon. Or like I said, if there's a lot of interest around this topic, we could do a masterclass of some kind. We do have the private Facebook group for listeners. You can find it on Facebook. It's always linked in the show notes. And there has been a pricing masterclass in that group before, and it's something I'd be happy to do again. And we could do it in a visual format where it's on Facebook Live or on Zoom. We can screen share and do things like that. But I just, the main point of this episode is that profit is absolutely something you can plan for and should plan for. You know, I'm really proud to say that I've been profitable from day one. And the only reason I think that's kind of remarkable is because I do see a lot of studio owners kind of going too fast and spending a lot early on things where you're still learning and growing really quickly and you're still figuring things out. And I always hope to save people some really costly mistakes. And again, hopefully this just gives a very, very baseline understanding of kind of how to price things in such a way that it is to your benefit and helps you keep more cash in your business or towards those goals that you have, if not to make sure that you're paying yourself and have enough money left over at the end of the day to be able to, you know, pay yourself back for all the time and hard work that you put into this. So that's going to do it for today's episode. Next week's episode is going to be fantastic. I am really, really looking forward to having you listen to this guest. I'm not going to share who it is. Sorry. But just know that next week's episode is going to be a fun one. Go ahead and think about whether or not you would come to a live show if we were able to pull that off at the North Americans this year. And I will see you next time here on TCRG to CEO Radio. Have an excellent week and plan for profit. Bye.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.